I'm Ebony K. Williams, your attorney at law and host. Welcome to Holding Court, where we analyze the very latest legal headlines everybody's already talking about. We dig into how the courts impact the culture. We break it all down for you, and we go straight from gavel to your news feed. And I promise you this, y'all, every single week, we're going to keep it a buck, keep it 100. Right, Dustin Ross?
That's right, Ebony. Let's go ahead and hold court.
Let's do it. Hey, what's up, dear jurors? Listen, it's your girl, Ebony K. Williams here. And as always, we're so glad that you're tuning in to Holding Court. Now, listen, Dustin and I are on a little bit of a break this week. You know, we're going to get a little much needed rest and relaxation. But really, we want to make sure that in this moment that we are making sure we do what we do. And that is always reflect on the magic that is Black heritage and Black people, right? So y'all know what we do here at Holding Court is we make sure that we are sharing the strides and the positivity that we're making as a people, and not just the heavy headlines, although, you know, we get into that too. So on this episode, we're going to put together a short little compilation of different stories and conversations that celebrate, right? Celebrate some of the powerful headlines that we've covered this year so far and have brought us a bit of Black joy. So listen, enjoy and catch me and Dustin next week when we'll be back with a brand new episode of Holding Court. You know, I hesitate, Dustin, to call it good news, but
right,
we'll call it better news.
Right, okay.
Better news than the usual bullshit.
Tepid news.
Tepid, you know,
news. Just tepid, lukewarm news.
You know what? If you had an old-ass Black grandma, I don't know what you are, and I love it. Every day, I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, so this is a sister.
Yes.
You've probably all heard of her name by now. Carriol Horn.
Mm-hmm.
She was a law enforcement officer with the Buffalo Police many years. She had, I think they say, about a 20-year career with the Buffalo Police Department until she was fired. Let go. Why? Well, because this woman had just enough act right in her to see a fellow officer, white man by the name of Gregory Kiewakowski.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he was using a chokehold. You know, they like to do that shit where they obstruct our fucking airway, Dustin.
Yeah, yeah.
This officer was using a chokehold on a handcuffed citizen. So this man is already no longer a threat. He's in cuffs. And this white officer, Gregory Kiewakowski, okay, was using a chokehold still. And the man was saying, "I can't breathe." The good sister Carriol Horn heard this. She intervened. She actually, I believe, removed the fellow officer from this man's airway and said, "You're killing him." Because I read, I was also listening to an interview she gave to CBS's Eureka Duncan, which is fantastic. You should Google that, y'all, if you're watching and listening, rather. Sister Horn said she could hear the man say, "I can't breathe, I'm dying." She recognized it, Dustin, and did the human thing, the natural thing, intervene and say, "You're killing him, get off of him."
Yes.
That's all she did. Well, what happened to her for doing that? She was fired. She was sued by this white officer for defamation.
And he won.
He won $65,000. Ain't that some bullshit? But then look at how people always tell on themselves. And what's the saying? It all comes out in the wash.
Yes.
Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because Kiewakowski's ass, even though he won his little defamation suit, how did his career end? Oh, that's right. He was actually, he was, quote, resigned, okay? This was back in, I think, 2011. After there was an investigation, and he was ultimately indicted and convicted, Dustin, of charges around the arrest of four Black teenagers. And it was all around the same kind of shit, that unjustified, harmful use of force. This time in the case of the four Black teenagers, he was ultimately sentenced and convicted and sentenced, rather. He actually served 4 months in prison.
Wow.
Now, what does that say? It says that this woman,
Carriol.
Officer Carriol.
Mm-hmm.
She saw what time it was with this motherfucker way back when.
Yes,
back
she
in
did.
2006.
Yep.
And then he was still on the force.
Yep.
Empowered, emboldened.
Yep.
How know? Who knows, Dustin, how many teens, adults, men, women, non-binaries this motherfucker affected, harmed, possibly could have damn near killed in those years.
Yep.
Because from 2006, when we knew there was a problem because this Black female officer acknowledged it, called it out, was ceremoniously let go of the mm-hmm. department and stripped of her pension. Because, mm-hmm. you know, that's a big thing with officers. We all know this. You know, the pay is not always the very, very best, but the benefits are great. Mm-hmm. They have this pension. It's really, you know, equates to often lifetime financial support. She was months away from being able to secure her pension, Dustin, when she was terminated.
That's a damn shame.
So what's happened just this past week is, you know, a righting of a wrong mm-hmm. that took place long ago. Basically, what happened to kind of right this tragic wrong is that an Erie County Supreme Court judge by the name of Dennis E. Ward has said, you know what? This should have never happened. As such, you know, I'm going to reinstate this woman's pension and give her 2 full years back pay to make up for when she was terminated. Is it justice? Of course, it's not justice. Does it go a long way towards acknowledging the fact that she took the absolute proper efforts, Dustin, and that this should have never happened to her? Absolutely. And what happened to her after she was fired, terminated from her position on the force, you know, she had a hard time of it.
Yeah.
You know, reported she was driving trucks and had to sometimes live in her car, all kind of shit just to make ends meet. And listen, this is important, too. There's an affirmative step that came out of this case that I like, Dustin.
Okay.
Because now it's actually something, I believe they're calling it Carriel's Law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was approved by the city council, 8-1. Now, because of this woman and her example, Carriel's Law says that an on-duty police officer, they have now an affirmative duty mm-hmm. to intervene when a fellow officer is using excessive force.
Can't believe that had to be written into law, but that's great. I have a little bit of confusion, though, because this shit went down in 2006, right?
Yep.
That's when she intervened.
Mm-hmm.
And they said she was awarded 2 years of back pay and her pension.
It's
the
not
math
equitable,
ain't mathin',
right?
Yeah.
The math ain't mathin'.
Why, how did that fly? Is that the best they could do, Ebony? 2 years of back pay?
It's not the best. I'm not about to sit here and lie for them, Dustin. It's
why
not
is
the
that,
best.
Why is that okay?
You know, it's not okay.
2006, we in 21.
True. And for all we know, this woman could still be on the force, happily employed to this day.
Still working.
Yeah. It's like I said, it's not justice. And she knows it's not justice. She went on Don Lemon and he asked her is if she felt vindicated. She said, I'm not vindicated until everyone's vindicated. So, listen, that's why did I start the segment, Dustin? Mm-hmm. I said, it's not good news.
It's
just all right news.
It's all right. Okay.
It's okie doke news.
Yeah.
You know, but it is a tragedy that, like you said, this actually now has to be written into law. It's being rectified in some form, partially, 15 years after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here's this judge with a really profound statement. He says this, Dustin, while the Eric Garners and the George Floyds of the world, they will never have a chance for a do-over. At least here there's some correction that can be done. The legal system can, at the very least, be the mechanism to help justice prevail, even if belatedly. Now, I hear your point, which is this still ain't justice. It's not. No, it's not. I think we have to be very careful, Dustin, with the way we use that word. But what he does go on to say, the judge here, Dustin, one of the issues in all of these cases is the role of other officers at the scene, and particularly their complicity in failing to intervene to save the life of a person to whom such unreasonable physical force is being applied. See, that's the only part of it that really gives me any kind of halfway good news vibe. It's really not the fact that this woman is getting her pension. She should have been had that. It's not the fact that she's getting 2 year full back pay. Like you said, that should be multiple times more. It's the fact that at least now we have, and this kind
something,
of legal record is important, though,
Dee. Mm-hmm.
You have a judge, a sitting judge, acknowledging that there should be an affirmative duty by an officer to intervene when your fellow colleague is sitting over here snuffing the life out of somebody. Mm-hmm. It's not okay to just sit there.
Mm-hmm.
To sit there is to be liable. That part's important.
After they've been taught to sit there and to not intervene and to back the blue and all that other
and
shit
that
they talk.
And that there will be, what's the word?
Repercussions.
Well, there's definitely going to be some repercussions. It's also going to be some retaliation.
Retaliation.
Yeah.
Severe retaliation because she was living in her vehicle.
Literally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so come on.
Right. This is a trained law enforcement officer and she's out here with odd jobs.
And let's talk about a lawsuit for defamation where he won a $65,000 judgment against her. What are we going to do about that.
I agree. And the sad thing is, legally, nothing can be done. Other than she could counter sue him, mm-hmm. actually, for some defamation of her own. And I think she would have a great chance of winning because now his ass has been, he's, quote, retired, which was under the cloak of a dark ass, smoky ass cloud, because he actually served 4 months in prison. And by the way, do you know how egregious and consistent your poor behavior has to be, Dustin, to be a law enforcement officer and end up going to prison?
At all. Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
Like, you got convicted and you didn't even get no probation.
Yeah.
They actually made you serve 4 months in jail.
Yep. So you're a real piece of shit.
Extra terrible fucking piece
of shit. And these were federal civil rights charges from that arrest of those four black teenagers. So this, to me, she needs to seek appropriate counsel and figure out a way to clean all of this up.
I agree.
This is a mess.
I think she, in addition to this pension and in addition to these measly 2 years of back pay, I believe... Officer Carrie O'Horn, mm-hmm. I believe she's in a great position to sue this individual, Kibotkowski, whatever the hell, and potentially the Buffalo Police Department.
Absolutely.
For defamation, for slandering her name and her reputation, and painting her to be the problem.
Yeah.
When in fact, this woman is a hero.
Absolutely.
I was watching the gentleman who was choked out and while handcuffed, he to this day, Dustin, says that he owes his very life to Officer Horn.
And he damn sure does.
Yeah, he's like, because
if it wasn't for her,
life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is a this right here, to me, this just exposes, you know, a lot of things that require some attention and some action. So,
absolutely. And it goes to show that that whole protect the blue and the blue code of silence and shit.
Don't mean shit.
It don't mean shit. And that's why I do when I talk to black officers and I've had some really important conversations with them over the years, but very much so recently. And listen, a lot of them are hip to the game, Dustin.
Mm-hmm.
They know that they can talk all that Blue Lives Matter bullshit all day and it's not black or white, it's blue. But when the shit hit the fan, they know that their black asses, officers they may be, will be the first ones out the door.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
And that's the truth. All right, listen, y'all, stay with us for more Holding Court highlights after this quick break. Hey, y'all, welcome back to Holding Court. But let's move on to Baltimore. This is interesting.
Okay.
Baltimore City, and they have a famed state's attorney by the name of Marilyn Mosby.
Yes.
Sister Mosby. She's dope. Yeah, she's a sore on my skiwi. and her husband, Nick Mosby, is also Baltimore City Council president. So, you know, they're a beautiful black power couple and they're really doing a damn thing in Baltimore.
Yeah,
shout out
the
to
name
them.
Rings bells in Baltimore. Okay.
Absolutely. Listen,
that's right.
It means something to be a Mosby in Baltimore.
Okay.
So Masur is doing something that I think is extremely important. She's using her prosecutorial discretion as the city attorney to say, you know what we're not going to do no more is prosecute bullshit. We're not going to prosecute prostitution or sex work. Mm-hmm. We're not going to prosecute simple drug possession. We're not going to prosecute public urination and, like, you know, just some bullshit, non-violent crimes, you know. And she said she had this to say in the official press release, D. She says, today, America's war on drug users is over. In the city of Baltimore, we leave behind the era of tough on crime prosecution and zero tolerance policing. And we no longer default to the status quo to criminalize mostly people of color for addiction.
I know that's right.
Very powerful statement. Very powerful because it's literally a policy change from the Reagan Nixon war on drugs, which was all about the criminalization of addicts. Which last I checked, addiction was a medical condition.
That's what I heard.
But that's what the hell they keep saying about opioid addiction.
Right.
Right. When it's in New Hampshire, when it's in Connecticut.
Then it's a medical issue.
Child
everybody else is just strung out.
Yeah, just a bunch of crackheads, right?
Right.
All right. Uh-huh. Welfare queens, I recall. So what Maryland is doing and what the prosecutors in Baltimore are doing here, is this is actually quite revolutionary. And it's really, it came about during COVID. So again, as we talk about the devastation and the oh my gosh, millions of lives lost in COVID, can't be overstated. But I do want us to start looking at some of the things that COVID has done for society that actually make us look at some shit we've been doing and reassess it.
I love that idea.
Right? Right? Maybe we need to do some shit differently. And what happened with COVID, right? We can't just be putting endless amounts of people in jail anymore, because that's going to lead to a public health crisis that affects us all.
So now you got to figure this shit out. Now you have to figure out some better policies. Mm-hmm. You have to figure it out now.
Yeah, so that's where this came from. This came from overcrowding of jails around bullshit, stupid-ass, non-violent or societal-threatening crimes like peeing on the street, a woman, man, or non-binary deciding to sell their bodies for commercial purpose, which that would seem like their right to me. Those things did not justify, in this prosecutor's opinion, the overcrowding of jails
and the
crowding of her docket in a court of law. So she said, fuck all that. We're not even pursuing that, literally. And you know what the result has been, Dustin? Not only have less people been incarcerated, and I mean a significant 18% of the incarcerated population in Baltimore has gone down. That's a lot.
That's an incredible number.
That's almost a quarter. Yeah, that's a lot. Also, quiet as kept, violent crime down 20%. Property crimes.
They talk about Baltimore.
Yes, property crimes. With this new policy of not prosecuting the bullshit, down 36%.
Yeah.
Instead, and for those that want to say, oh, well, you know, now she's soft on crime. No, she's not. Get the hell out of here. Prosecutor Mosby is saying this. We're going to redirect our focus, just like you talked about earlier, Dustin, with Cuevonim. Redirect the focus and the resources to prosecute shit that needs to be prosecuted. Armed robbery, carjacking, massive drug distribution organizations that are the underbelly of the violence in Baltimore, and not use valuable jury time on those suffering from addiction.
Come on, Marilyn, with the come on. That's what I'm talking about right there. What an example she's setting for other cities all over the country and really globally to have a different perspective that is really going to be effective. And you can see the difference in tangible data and numbers that make sense for anybody that looks at it. I think this is great. And where's her Peace Prize? Where's her fucking Image Award?
No, that's
give
facts.
Give her all the things.
Give her her hard work. And I'm going to say this and be done with it. Now, I'm not going to make this about Kamala Harris because it's not about her, but it is about the gross demonization that a lot of folks and a lot of so-called progressives and a lot of us in the culture, we like to say that any and everybody that chooses to work as a prosecutor
is a piece of shit. No, it's not true.
We cannot do that, Dustin. I talked about this years ago in the Breakfast Club. I'm talking about it now in Holden Court. Y'all, black people, I'm fucking talking to you. If we don't create space for the kind of work Sister Marilyn Mosby is doing, the kind of work that the prosecutor in Philadelphia is doing, the kind of that progressive prosecutors are, Kim Fox in Chicago, these prosecutors are using their discretion to make policy better that impacts not only black folks, but society at large.
The real work needs to be done. And if you just sit back for 5 minutes and really learn, really just assess this, it's crystal clear. You have to understand the capacity that people have in different positions of that bring you power, in a situation where you never had it before.
Yeah.
Look at what she's done.
Yep. But if she was listening to the peanut fucking gallery,
right?
Oh, you know, you a traitor to the race if you a DA, you a traitor to the race if you want to work as a top cop prosecutor, she would not be able to implement this massive change for our people and the people of Baltimore as a whole. And that's the thing, y'all. We gotta stop with these fake narratives, you know?
Yeah.
Are there some problematic bullshit piece of shit prosecutors? Fuck yes. And they gotta be voted out.
Right. Are we supposed to continue having just a whole bunch of rotten ass prosecutors? Or should we have people of integrity in that position who may be able to do things a little bit differently and help every day?
Yeah, we gotta make space for people to change shit from the inside.
Slow down, y'all, because it looked like Marilyn Mosby then moseyed her way on into the history books with this one.
Come on now. I like that alliteration, Dustin. Mm-hmm. Thank you now. This is a follow-up. Look at good old Virginia. You know, Virginia kind of been low-key showing out recently.
Okay.
You know, abolishing the death penalty.
Yes.
You know? And now here they go again. This is Virginia Governor Ralph Northam got a new bill basically offering up reparations in the form of college education scholarships.
Love to see it.
You know, I'm here for that shit. Love it. It's important. And he's very specific. And the local representative, Delegate David Reed, who actually introduced the bill, they're very specific in honoring what this legislation will and won't do. Reed says this, it's going to take multi-generations to be able to correct some of those problems.
Yeah.
But college education is often the way for people to be able to escape those cycles of poverty that they and their families have lived in for generations.
Yeah.
That's it. It's just like we were saying last week, D, one sweeping policy is not going to correct 400 years of brutality and trauma. It's never going to happen. There's no stimmy check that is going to do that for us. Okay.
It's
get that shit out your head.
Tink, tink. It ain't no, there's no stimmy that's going to help.
Ain't no stimmy going to do that.
Yeah.
But to me, Dustin Ross, this is what reparations should look like. This is the infancy of it. It's a small step to a much larger schism that says, let's look at the ways that slavery and post-emancipation Black codes, Jim Crow codes, devastated Black citizenship. We redlined them out of housing districts. We took away their political voting power. We lynched and killed them for even attempting to own property, own storefronts, own commercial businesses. We did not even let them go to most major universities in this country until well into the 1960s and sometimes 70s. That is why we have HBCUs to this day. So when I see this coming out of Virginia, that specifically UVA, shout out to you, Thomas Jefferson, with your punk ass, Montecito, how you like that shit? The Virginia Commonwealth University, Longwood University, Virginia Military Institute, and the College of William and Mary, all having what are going to be called, and I really like the name of it too, the Enslaved Ancestors College Access Scholarship and Memorial Program.
Period.
And it is specifically to do the thing that I really need this reparations effort to focus on, which is not just any and everybody that's of color. No disrespect to our African brothers and sisters that have immigrated to this country. Mm-hmm. No disrespect to our Asian and Hispanic brothers and sisters who have immigrated to this country or were born here themselves.
Right.
But there's a special trauma and a special, I want to use the right word here, Dustin.
A special hardship.
That's it. A special hardship that applies to those of us who are the direct descendants of American slavery.
Yes.
It just simply hits.
It just is.
Different.
It just is what it is.
It just is what it is. And so I love that this particular scholarship, D, is specific for those that are the descendants of American slavery.
Yeah. Important. I love it.
Important. Okay, y'all, listen, another quick break, and then we've got even more memorable moments after this short break. Hey, y'all, welcome back to Holding Court. As I teased, Evanston, Illinois, and if you don't know where that is, it's right outside of Chicago, has voted, their city council has voted 8-1, and I'm going to tell you about that one vote in a minute.
Yeah, who the fuck was the one?
Oh, I'm going to tell you about your girl. So 8-1 voted last week to actually approve a distribution of $400,000. And I know that does not sound like a lot of money because it's not. Mm-hmm. But I have a theory on this, Dustin. So $400,000 has been appropriated to eligible Black residents through what they're deeming as like housing awards. So $25,000 to each recipient. And that money can be used for home repairs, for down payments for a home, for mortgage payments, and things of that nature. And they picked the housing, Dustin, because Evanston, in particular, many other places in the country, right, had egregious redlining, housing discrimination laws in the Jim Crow South post-emancipation that kept Black people very intentionally boxed out of home ownership opportunities.
You see that?
And we all know now that home ownership is really one of the entry points and gateway opportunities to building generational wealth.
Absolutely.
So because our people, our ancestors were flagrantly denied those opportunities, that is part of the explanation as to why we've got the wealth gap that we have today, with Black people only having a tenth of the wealth of our white counterparts. So for me, Dustin, I got to say, I like that the reparations is fueled in this particular capacity, because
I do too.
Yeah. The reality is, you know, we see how folks acting with these stimulus checks, right? So, I mean, can we just be honest? Like,
just imagine, girl, what they're going to do. If they mess around with the stimmy, wait till they get that reppy, okay?
That reppy?
When I tell you.
Folks, $25,000 cash checks?
Oh, when I tell you.
Nah.
Well, okay, so this is a step in the right direction. I don't know how many steps we're going to take. If it's $25,000 grants, it's a total of $400,000. That's about 12 families, right?
Yeah, it's a very small amount.
Yeah.
It's a very small number of people that this will directly impact on the onset.
But
you just said something very important, Dustin Ross. Mm-hmm. You said it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I really need people to sit and understand what process means and looks like.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what it is. I think that's what it's intended to be. And I think that a step in the right direction is better than zero steps at all, which is where we've been
right
on the issue of reparations. So let's talk about your friend that voted against it. I said it was a vote of 8-1. So one city council person was voting against it. And that was the good sis, Alderwoman Cicely Fleming. So Alderwoman Fleming, Dustin, is speaking about how she voted against it because, quote, it wasn't honoring my ancestors. And I was very intrigued by that headline. So I'm like, let me listen to this interview. So she basically says, Dustin, that she feels like, yes, it's good for housing. But when you talk about reparations, she wants to see something more holistic, more comprehensive, something that's not just about housing, but also includes, you know, education, other healthcare, all these other ways in which Black people have obviously and consistently been economically injured as a result of discrimination. Now, of course, yes,
yeah,
obviously.
I want $1 million. But the thing is, we got to do what we got to do. Great big ideas, girl. But we have to do what we have to do right now. So.
Yeah, and listen, she's earned her right on the city council. It's indeed her right to vote how she sees fit. But in the interview, D, it sounded a bit like semantics to me, because at one point she literally says, like, housing, yes, reparations, no. I mean, tomato, tomato, sis.
Right.
Like, what are we talking about here? Are we if what we're talking about is fueling any and all economic resources towards the closing of the wealth gap, the empowerment of the economic purse of Black families and communities, let's just get on with the shit,
right?
You know, and all this $400,000 is, which is not a lot, as you've conceded, as I've conceded, but it's a step. Shit, who among us couldn't do a little something, something with $25,000?
Right.
Okay. So I really want, for the bigger picture, this is not just targeted to this one councilwoman. I just want all of us as Black folk to keep some perspective in mind as we start to see, because I do predict that, Dustin. I think we're going to start seeing slowly but surely
more
and more of this. Yeah, yeah. And I think we need to be a little careful, right, not to want to cut off our noses despite our face.
Yes.
In this reparations journey, because it is a journey. It is going to be an extended process. This is not going to be a open and shut, one and done type of situation.
No, not at all.
Right, where Black Americans are walking around with a $75,000 stimulus check apiece and just out here popping off.
Right.
That's not going to be the way it looks. Personally, I don't think that's the way it should look, because frankly, I know me. I'll speak for myself. I'm a spender, okay? I'm just game. I'm a spender, and I think a lot of us are. And I think it is best that we really assess the systemic places where that money, our money, because it is, let's be clear, this is the money off of the backs of the blood that courses through our veins.
It is
owed to us. Our money now needs to be invested in targeted ways that can have a long-term benefit to the generational wealth gap. I think that's obvious.
I mean, which is essentially what we would want anyway in this scenario, right? The point of reparations would be to fix what was messed up. And there are certain areas where we are obviously at a disadvantage and we could use some help. We could use a boost in that moment. And housing is definitely one of them for all the reasons that you just named. So mm-hmm. I think this is a good thing. And reparations is something that has to be imagined. It has to be conceptualized. It has to be designed to have the right impact on our community as Black Americans. So it's not going to be just a money grab that, I don't know. I'm not saying that's what she's saying it should be.
I'm not. Yeah,
no,
I'm not.
But that ain't what it's going to be. Okay.
No. And for anybody that's got that in your head, go ahead and control or delete that shit.
Please.
It is not going to happen like that. And like you said, back to the point, Dustin, of it's a step in the right direction. Evanston's already conceded that too. This is a broader restorative housing program that's at play here. And this $400K, it's the first initiative in a $10 million distribution. And even that $10 million is a small number. So it's just going to be a part of a bigger and bigger and bigger pie. And that's it. Listen, the eligibility, you talked about only the 16 households that qualify based off the current requirements. And listen, they are a little limited. And I say that a limited number of Black residents qualify, because to get the $25K, the resident themselves in Evanston or their ancestors have to have lived in Evanston between these years, 1919 and 1969. That's a small window. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's part of the reason why Alderman Fleming voted against it, she says, is because, you know, again, that's so narrow. And I get it. She's not wrong on that. But I would just employ other elected officials, as they also start to vote on these types of programs. You know, just consider the big picture and always remember, you know, these things are just small steps towards a much bigger reparations goal.
Absolutely.
Holden Court comes to you from Uppity Productions in association with Dossie Media and presented by the Black Effect Network from iHeartRadio. Audio services always brilliantly provided by One of One Productions. Y'all check them out at oneofoneproductions.com. Y'all join us next week, or it'll be back in session as always. And in the meantime, stay safe. Y'all keep your faith and always read the what, Dustin?
Terms and conditions, y'all.